Okay, this is Fabio Akira from QCon again for the Ruby on Rails podcast. And yesterday we were recording with Ola Bini, so part one cracks down in the middle of the conversation. And now we're going to go to part two, and I hope we didn't miss too much from the previous conversation. So Ola Bini again, and we were talking about, I think we'll just skip the last part and go directly to the I/O stuff. So you were explaining about prototype-based languages and why do you think they're compelling not having classes?
Okay, so yes. The most famous prototype-based language is probably JavaScript. And just to give you a feel of what a prototype-based language actually is about, it's basically you don't have any classes, so you don't have this distinction. Your world isn't divided in the part of classes and the part of objects. Instead, you only have objects. And objects are related to each other. So the one object can be cloned from another object, and so on. So, and this is why, I mean, that's why it's called prototype-based languages, because you start out with something, and then you modify it, and then you create something else based on that, or several things based on that, and then you modify one of those and start on from that one, and so on. So you create new prototypes for new objects all the time and clone them, and so on. And to me, this way of thinking about stuff actually makes more sense than having to decide if something is a class or if something is an object. It also makes your model so much more convenient because you avoid stuff like, well, what is a static method, for example? Well, that's a method that belongs to the class instead of to the object. Okay, well, that's an interesting distinction. How do I choose? So in a prototype-based language, you only have objects. So the only thing you have to choose is which object you're going to put something on instead of if it's going to be on the class-style objects or on the object-style objects.
So then we were explaining that I/O is a language that, first of all, that JavaScript is a prototype-based language, and there is this other one called I/O that you think it's maybe more suited to this kind of programming?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, so the problem with JavaScript is that it's, as a language, it's got a fair number of corner cases and special cases of how it's handling stuff. And it's kind of, sometimes it can do lots of interesting stuff right under your nose without you actually expecting it. It's just, ask any JavaScript program what the double equals sign actually does. many have been bitten by that one. And I/O is a very small language. It's extremely small. The syntax is really simple. It's based on the Smalltalk tradition of things, so it's using spaces instead of dots to call methods. So you actually, to call a method, you just do the thing. You first say you want to call a method on the number 42. Then you write 42 space and then the method name that you want to call. And this is actually... this is actually not called method calling. It's actually called message passing, because and there is no real difference in how it's implemented. It's just a different way of thinking about the whole thing. Okay, you send a message to an object, and that it's that object's responsibility to actually know how to perform something. And you see the same kind of nomenclature in Ruby, for example.
And is it maybe not safe to say that Ruby has some prototyping rules because every class is also an object because a class is an instance of a class, so maybe it's related?
Well, so the way I'm talking about, even if classes are objects in your system like they are in Ruby or Smalltalk, there is still a fundamental distinction in a class-based language, and that is that every object has a class, and a class can only be a class-like object. You can't create an instance of anything, because that's the whole distinction. You have this world of things that you can create instances of, and then you have all the objects that can be instances of stuff. And this distinction makes the model slightly more complicated, but it's, in some cases, it's easier to reason about it, but I believe that one of the reasons that class-based programming has been so successful is because it's easier to make it performant. And I think that's a really bad reason to choose a programming paradigm.
Okay. And then I think we finally come to your new language that I wanted to explain all those small bits of every single language and come to I/O, because you have a language called Aoki. Is it related or is it just the naming?
Well, yeah, it's definitely related. I decided to name my language Aoki because it's based very much on I/O. But it's also gotten quite a lot of inspiration from both Lisp, quite specifically Common Lisp, and Ruby. Those are the languages that I see as the closest heritage, but there's also much of Self and Smalltalk in there. And Aoki is also, it's like I/O, a very small language. It runs on top of the JVM, and it's got a very clean, simple syntax using spaces, exactly like I/O. But it also allows you to use basically any kind of operator you would think about, can think about in your language. And one of the goals is actually that you will be able to create domain-specific languages using Aoki that can be very flexible, because you can tie stuff together and make basically anything that looks vaguely like Aoki code run and actually do what you want it to do. And it's prototype-based, of course, since it's based on I/O. And it's got some features that I think are more or less unique in the language. It's you get access to all the elements of the language at runtime, and code is data and data is code. So Aoki is definitely inspired by Lisp in this regard. It's actually something called homoiconic, which means that the data structures that you modify in the language are the same data structures that are used to represent the structure of the language. This means that Aoki has macros that are syntactic macros. In fact, I have two kind of macros. I have something I call macro, which is more or less call by need parameters that I can do whatever I want with. And I also have syntax. And syntax is a way of changing the actual AST of the running program at runtime. These are really powerful techniques, and they allow you to abstract away some things that you really can't abstract away in most other languages. Another feature that I'm really proud of, but I'm very curious why not more languages have adopted it, and that is something called the condition system. And this is one of those naming issues. You need to be very careful to distinguish between conditionals and the condition system. Because conditionals are if statements and while things that do different things based on if a value is true or false. That's a conditional. But the condition system in Aoki is a generalization of exceptions. So I've always thought that exceptions are a very low-level feature. They are definitely essential to be able to do in your language. But in many cases, they don't provide you with the right kind of facility to actually handle the error. I mean, say in Java, for example, say that you try to open up a file and you get a file not found exception. Well, what can you do about that? Well, you can catch the error, but if you're actually using some other code that triggers a file not found exception, you have no way of actually fixing this error by giving a new file name, for example. The only thing you can do is bail out and write the exception to the error log. While if you have a condition system, the condition system allow you to... there are actually several different moving parts in a condition system. But the things that makes it really different is that a condition system can execute code when a condition happens at the point where the problem actually happens. So this means that... And I can also... The code that signals a condition, which is what is called, can also provide different ways of getting out of the problem. So in the example I just mentioned, for example, you could a way of getting out of it would be to provide a new file name. So you can actually, in a condition system like Common Lisp has and Aoki has, you can, in one piece of code, say, okay, if this file not found exception happens, well, then I want to invoke a restart. And the restart is what allows me to actually provide a new file name.
But let me see if I understand this. It's obviously difficult to picture this without coding, but So there is exceptions in a way that some errors happen, but mm-hmm. now you can, for instance, maybe connect a code there to execute when this condition happens mm-hmm. instead of raising the exception up.
Yeah, and at the place where the exception happens.
Like a block or closure, yeah, something like that.
I mean, an exception generally happens totally in the middle of lots of code. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have lots of code before and lots of code after. But when an exception happens, all the code after just goes down the drain and yeah. the exception throws. Wouldn't it be nice to be able to, okay, where that exception happens, if I have a way of getting out of this problem without throwing that code away, wouldn't it be nice to just fix the problem and let the code continue?
Okay, now that's useful.
Mm, that's really useful. And it's really useful for errors, of course, but it's also extremely useful for other things. So the typical example that I like to bring up is warnings. Now, warnings in, for example, Ruby have a tendency to be totally separate from the condition system, from the exception system,
mm-hmm.
because, of course, you don't want a warning to throw an exception, right? But if you have conditions instead, a warning doesn't have to throw an exception. A warning can just signal a condition that a warning happened, and then if no one does something about that warning, it will just print that warning and continue. So the default case in a warning is to print that warning, but you can establish a handler that will take that warning and a specific type of warning and ignore it, for example, so you won't see it. That's pretty useful thing, and you can use it to other things and except for warnings and errors too. And the final thing that to tie into all these things that really make them extremely useful is that when you have a condition system with restarts, you can build in a debugger. So every time when you, and this is one of the things that come from the Lisp community too, when you work at an interactive prompt, a REPL, this becomes much more useful if you can fix things when they happen. Say that you have a really large program and you trigger it from your REPL, and then a problem happens deep inside of it. Well, what if that REPL just gives you a debugger inside of that place where it happened and also gave you all the options of how it can get back from the error state at that point? And that's what Common Lisp has offered for a long time with the condition system. And that's something that I will be able to do with Aoki too. Really simple. I mean, if you call something that calls something that calls something on the Aoki REPL and an error happens long down there, you're going to get some text that says, okay, this problem happened here and here. These are the different ways you can fix it. You can, for example, you can give, okay, we try to call a method that doesn't exist. Then I can give you the option of defining a new method that will be used in that case. Or I can give the option, oh boy, I probably misspell that name, and you can give a new name to use there, and so on. So I can actually provide different hooks into the running process by a debugger, and that debugger doesn't cost me anything to have at that point.
So does it the way you explain it completely replaces the current exception system where you cascade exceptions down upstream?
Well, that's the default case. If no debugger is invoked and no one is handling it, yes, an exception will be thrown. And I've only mentioned handlers right now. So basically my condition system has four different parts. It's got the conditions themselves. It's got the restart, which are ways of getting back from it. Handlers are established things that will be able to handle a specific condition in a place where it happens. But you can also add something called a rescue. And a rescue will force the condition to throw an exception that goes out to the place where that rescue is defined. The difference between this and in a language like Ruby, for example, or Java, is that the exception will not be thrown until it knows that there is an established rescue that will take care of it. So
instead of recklessly throwing...
Exactly. I mean, the way that model works in Java and Ruby is that, okay, let's throw it and hope that someone takes care of it. Otherwise, we bail out.
Uh-huh.
And that's not a terribly useful way of doing it if you want to do a general solution to the problem. Now, all of this stuff could have been implemented in Ruby. There is actually a guy who's done it in Python. The only primitive, really strange language feature you need to have it working is exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
So you can build all this stuff on top of exceptions, but you to make it really useful, your language actually need to give you lots of or your standard library need to give you all these places where you can fix conditions.
Mm.
It needs to be integrated into the library and in lots of different places to be useful. So that's why even if someone implemented a condition system for Ruby right now, it wouldn't be that effective because Ruby isn't using it itself, and it's not all over the core libraries.
Yeah, it's the same discussion that we have about closures not being useful in Java because they're not in the standard libraries anyway. So
exactly. So conditions are one of those features that you really should have in your language from the beginning to make them really powerful because it's a significant effort to retrofit that stuff afterwards.
Of course, this is speculation, but knowing that Lisp had conditional system for a long time, why do you think languages like newer language like Java, C Sharp, and other languages doesn't implement them?
See, that's something that I've been thinking about for a long time, and I really can't figure I can't figure out the reason. I think that, well, in some cases, I know that C++, they consider having a condition system, but they decided not to have it because I think that the way they're talking about it was that, well, a condition system is only useful for debugging. And that point of view is just, oh, and debugging isn't important? No, of course not. You don't write any bugs in C++. So it's just, and of course, a lot of the power of the debugger gets diminished if you're not used to having a REPL or an interactive prompt where you code stuff. So in a language like Java, you would never be able to interactively give restarts.
Oh.
You would only have them in the code. I mean, I still believe that they are useful for stuff, but they're not as useful as when you can have both an interactive version and a version that works inside of the implementation at runtime.
Okay. And coming from you, of course, I think Aoki brings dynamic typing, prototype-based programming, functional programming, probably. What else does? What are the main characteristics that defines this language?
Well, so yes, it's a prototype-based, object-oriented, dynamically typed language. It's very dynamic. Everything happens at runtime. It's got you can modify all the runtime structures, so you can remove or add new methods, you can generate new stuff at runtime, you can evaluate stuff, and so on. All that stuff is kind of standard. You can also tune how, say for example, you can actually, if you want to, you can define your own method type. So you can define a method that doesn't take keyword arguments if you would like to. Because the runtime gives you access to all the hooks that makes it possible to do a method. Actually, the current methods, they're implemented right now, could have been implemented in Aoki itself, because all those things are available at runtime.
It's Lisp.
Definitely. I mean, when I'm further along, I'm planning to write a meta-circular interpreter that will actually be written in Aoki, so I can just have Aoki implemented in Aoki itself, because it's a very small language, and that will work. It's not entirely functional, but I try to provide some functional... for example, enumerables in Ruby is a good example of higher order algorithms that use functional style when you work with them. And I'm going to provide the same kind of things. But since Aoki allow you to send code around in a way that you can't do in Ruby, it will be much more readable and easier to work with than it is with Ruby's enumerable. I mean, say a typical example, say you want to map a string of numbers to another string of numbers. Or a list of numbers to another list of numbers. Well, in Ruby, you would probably have the literal syntax for with the numbers, and then you do dot map, and then you would send in a block by doing curly bracket, and then open a pipe, and then an argument name n, for example, and then a pipe, and then what was it? Double.
Yeah, the list of numbers you said.
Doubling it.
Oh, you were doubling, okay.
Yeah, so, and then I would say n times 2, and then end curly bracket. Now, in Aoki, what I would do is I would first have the open square brackets for the literal syntax, and then 1, 2, 3, end, then a space, then map, and then an open paren, and then times two, because that's the only thing I need.
It's like the tuproc in Ruby or something.
Yeah, it looks a little bit like the tuproc stuff does, but it's more general.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, so if I really want to have a, I can give it an argument too. I can do map, and then I can do n, comma, and then n times two. By those two things do the same thing.
Not having a dot doesn't it doesn't have any case where it's ambiguous of what we're talking about, not having something connecting the method to the object itself.
Well, as it turns out, that's no problem because those connections happens in other places, and Smalltalk has been doing it for a long time, and Smalltalk code is extremely readable. Mm-hmm. So the punctuation I have commas, of course, and you still have to provide. This is one of the things that differ from Ruby, actually. You have to have parentheses around arguments to methods. But you don't have to give parentheses if there are no arguments given.
But the
parentheses makes that disambiguation much easier.
Mm-hmm.
So the Smalltalk could get away with parentheses because they had different ways of the precedence rules said that everything that was an argument had to come after a keyword argument, and then the rules were very easy to figure out, actually. But as it turns out, Smalltalk code that does this a lot without using parentheses is actually not that easy to read.
Mm.
So the parentheses give structure. And Aoki allows you to get rid of the parentheses if you really want to do a DSL without them, because you can actually write syntax that transforms stuff. So you don't actually need the parentheses in all cases. And everything that is an operator can also be used in an infix operation without the parentheses. So there are ways of getting around that if you need it.
Oh, I see. And what kind of, is it compiled, is it interpreted? What's the way it runs?
So the Aoki, as I mentioned, is a very dynamic language. That means that right now it's interpreted because you have access to the runtime structure of the program at all times. It needs to keep that runtime structure around, and since you can modify it, there is really no way of doing that without actually having an interpreter. So it's a very simple tree walking interpreter. I have ideas for how to compile some of it to JVM bytecode, but my main philosophy with Aoki has been to avoid all kinds of premature optimizations.
Okay.
And as it turns out, many people say that when designing a language, but it kind of sneaks in there anyway. So I've tried to avoid that. Every time I think, oh man, this is not going to perform well at all, then I've recklessly thrown it into the mix anyway. Because I think that it's much more important to stretch limits of how expressive a language can be instead of stretching the limits of how expressive can it be while still performing well. I think that we have tried those kind of experiments, and I think it's time now when we have so good, partly we have really good machine, really fast machines, we also have extremely good runtime. So since I'm running on the JVM, I benefit from Java Hotspot and the garbage collectors and so on. And I mean, we have so good systems right now that it's time to just disregard performance totally and see what kind of programming language would it end up being if we don't care about performance at all. If we just care about expressing things in the most succinct, readable way possible, could we actually write programs in a different way in that case? Maybe.
Yeah, maybe that was what Alan Kay thought when they made Smalltalk, because at the time we didn't have that powerful machines to make that dynamic of a language, but even then they did it. So maybe that's the same kind of philosophy.
Absolutely. And I think that's, the philosophy of both Lisp and Smalltalk has been for a long time that doing these kinds of really powerful things can actually be made to perform after the fact. But it's important to not restrict the power. Mm-hmm. Once you have the power, and this is also one of those things that turns out to be really important. Once you need to have performance characteristics of your language, you actually need to make restrictions in some cases and things you have to make possible. And that means, in turn, that your language will be more complicated because you will have restrictions and you will have exceptions to how things work. So take, for example, Java. Java have now four different types of things that you can pass around. You have primitive values of eight different primitive types. You have native arrays. You have objects. And you have enums. All these things actually need to be handled differently in code.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to do a generic library that can work with any kind of thing that someone can send in, you'll actually have to write 10 different methods. If you want to have two arguments, you'll have to write 100 methods.
Yeah.
And so on. And that's because Java tried to be smart about performance and add native stuff that would perform really well. Well, yeah, it performs better, but it's hell to program in because it's just not expressive because there are so many special cases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because way back in Java 1.0, they was very constrained about performance, but if they have done a more expressive mm-hmm. language back then, now we have the technology to make it fast, so it would maybe pay off if yes. they did that. And we wouldn't be having this discussion over JRuby and Groovy and whatever.
Yes, that's true. I mean, it's been established that having native primitive values in your language doesn't necessarily help anymore because we have really good ways of finding out where we can use those values even if they're objects
mm-hmm.
Using techniques such as escape analysis.
Yes. And in Aoki, are you going to follow the Avi Bryant's motto of turtles all the way down, or the standard libraries are going to be written in pure Java or something?
It's going to be as much turtle as possible. There, right now, before I had enough of the language in place, I've written it in Java, but I'm actually, the more of the language I get in place, the more is going to be written in Aoki itself. And as I mentioned, I plan on rewriting a meta-circular interpreter in the language itself. I think it should be possible to quite easily implement the whole language in itself, actually. So yes, that's definitely what I'm gonna do. I mean, stuff like I have some pretty primitive operations that are actually implemented in Aoki itself. For example, all the Boolean operators like and if true, and all the short circuiting stuff and things like that.
Okay, and how far from completion is Aoki right now?
Oh, that's a good question. That depends on how you define completion. I plan on having Aoki 0 released in a few weeks. My goal is to, it's gotta be released before Christmas.
It's gotta be.
Yeah, that's my goal. I mean, it's not a goal if I don't have a must in it, right?
Okay.
So that's and I have a specific amount of things that I want to have in it, and I'm getting pretty close to that. The one thing that I'm not gonna have in Aoki 0, which is gonna be a large feature, is the Java integration stuff.
Oh, okay.
So Java, you will not, Aoki 0 will not allow you to call out to Java code because that's such a large thing. So I want to get the language in place before I design in that stuff. There's going to be three actual real applications or libraries, you may call them, in the language when I release Aoki 0. That's my kind of core thing. Okay, these things I need to have in the first release. And those are going to be a unit or a testing framework influenced by RSpec. Because
okay.
I'm currently using RSpec to test Aoki, but Aoki 0, I will port all my tests to the Aoki testing framework.
IOSpec.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know what to call it yet. But that's definitely going to be a part of it. I'm going to have an interactive prompt.
Okay.
It's probably going to be called EIK. IIK. You don't have to pronounce it with that voice if you don't want to. Because that's a really good thing to have, and I'm really already missing it. So, and I think I have most of the language in place to be able to implement it. I need eval, and I need a reader. But that's basically it. And the final thing that I need to have is a tool to generate documentation. Because
IDoc.
Yeah, I think I don't know what this is a good thing. I can always, since I'm using K in the language name, I can always intersperse the C's with K's instead of and make really cool things. But yeah, the documentation, that's one of those things that I built in from the start. Any object in Aoki can have a documentation string attached to it. So that means that all the core, mimics and all the core methods and macros actually have documentation attached to them. And
but it's not in the sense that it's comments in code, it's a metadata of the object.
It's metadata that is available at runtime. This is actually something that you can get the documentation for any object. You just call the method documentation on anything, and you will get the documentation string if there is one for that object. So that means that I can actually create a very simple Aoki program that just walks the walks the entire structure of the language and outputs documentation based on that. And and an interesting thing that I came up with a few weeks ago that's going to be a part of it too. And this I think is actually truly something I haven't seen in any language. Since I have the documentation system from scratch, and since I have everything documented very well and integrated with the system, and since I have this specification framework, this testing framework that is based on RSpec, well, when I generate the documentation, I will be able to look up the actual specifications, the tests for that piece of code.
Awesome.
So in the actual documentation pages, I will be able to show you, okay, this is the documentation for this method. Click here to see the code that implements this method. These are the specs of this method, and you can also click on them to see the implementation of those specs. So I mean, we've been talking a long time about using tests as documentation. Well, why not make that a first class thing, so you actually have the tests integrated into the documentation that you automatically generate for your application or library. I mean, I would love to see that in say, for example, I go in for looking to RDoc for something like RSpec. I mean, why don't I see all the tests for a specific element when I go into that page? It just makes sense.
Yes, exactly. And another thing about documentation, why do you think no one in all those thousands of languages never... Because that's one thing that I was thinking as well, not having documentation as metadata first class things in the language.
Well, I mean, so Lisp has had that for a long time.
Okay, yeah.
Smalltalk has had it for a long time. So I mean,
I think it's just both of them.
It's just that I don't understand why language designers make choices like that. They just throw away all these great ideas. Another thing that also is something I haven't seen is a language design test driven.
Yeah.
Aoki is written totally test driven. I always do a TDD. I do a test first of what I want to write. I do a test of a parse that should work and what it should parse into, and then it fails, and then I write the stuff to implement that parsing, the grammar of that. And that means that I have an extremely good test suite that actually tests the language from lots of different corner cases, but also the small, simple stuff.
Which means you already have the spec for the language implemented with the language.
Exactly. I get that for free because that's a way of working with it. I mean, that's the way I design it, and that's also a way of just getting the test for free. Because, I mean, I have a regression suite that's just there from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And so I have something like almost 1,500 different tests right now. And that's pretty good. They cover pretty much all of the implemented stuff, both the language parsing, the libraries, and the core way of how the language works. And I don't see that. I haven't seen that in any other language.
Yeah, I think there's not. So maybe this is a test bed for what a well-designed, well-polished language should be, maybe.
Yeah, I think that I have at least had a few ideas that most people haven't done.
And where the inspiration for Aoki came from? Were you expecting to use in a real project, or it was something that, it would be nice to have all those pieces together?
Yeah, I mean, so I've been a language geek for a long time, and actually this started out for a year ago when I, okay, what's the next language I'm going to learn? Well, I've kind of learned that language enough to know what it's about, and that language, and that language, and that language.
You're out of options.
And I tried to figure out the next language to actually learn. And one of the things that ends up happening when you have learned so many languages is that there, even if you see a new language, it doesn't take you any time to actually understand it, because most language doesn't have anything new. I mean, if you know enough Lisp, you will understand most languages. I mean, basically, what you should do is you should learn Lisp, both Common Lisp and Scheme, really well, and then you should go learn Haskell really well, and then you can basically understand everything in between. Okay. Because there is nothing, there is no language feature, no thing you can see in any of the languages in between those things that don't exist in some way in those other languages.
Yeah, this is important, because when I say to people that they should learn more language, they say, oh, I've been in VB, then I went to Java, then to C Sharp, and then, oh, I think I know all the languages now. So they don't know all the functional branches and stuff like that.
Yeah, and there is also, I mean, so those two, I would say the Haskell and Common Lisp and Scheme and Smalltalk, they all occupy the, I mean, they are the top of the mountains of these language features. They are the ones that got most of them or all of them. So if you understand everything you see in a Common Lisp program or in a Haskell program, well, then you are extremely well suited to understand everything in Java, and you can understand stuff that you just can't do in Java, and you can implement your code in Java in a way that is actually a better way of expressing algorithms, but it's not used because Java developers haven't subjected themselves to that way of thinking. It's just a way of changing the way your mind works. But anyway, so what ended up happening was that I realized, well, I know all these languages, and all of them have problems, and none of them obviously suit me, because I don't think anyone has a perfect language for them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, there are, of course, people like Simon Peyton-Jones, for example, who designs Haskell together with other people. He probably Haskell is probably pretty close to his ideal language. But what I wanted to do was to see, okay, I know all these languages, I know all these great features, and some of them are really good at some things, and some of them are good at other things. What happens if I put them together and try to really, really do something, a new combination of them? And as it turns out, the feeling I get right now is that Aoki is more powerful than Lisp, because I can.
That's a bold statement.
I mean, every language can do everything any other language can do, but there are some expression capabilities in Aoki that I don't see. They're very clunky things you can do in Lisp. But the main reason I'm saying that is because, strictly speaking, I have more powerful syntactical macros, because they can modify. The surrounding code of the place where they are invoked, which is kind of crazy, but it's also something that I can see being highly useful for implementing DSLs.
Yeah, I think another thing that people usually, I'm not a Lisp guy, but some people say that what they think is kind of difficult in Lisp is that because you have macros, you can redefine the language so much that it becomes something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's true, and that's also part of the power, because the way you generally write a Lisp program is that you first write a language for implementing your problem in, and then you implement the problem in that language. So say that you're going to do a stock trading application. Well, the first step when you, as a Lisp program start, is to modify Lisp to be a language that is good to express stock trading in. And then you write the specific stock trading application you want to do in that custom language. This is something you can do because Lisp has macros that allow you to do this. And I mean, it's called little languages. And what's interesting is that they're not external languages; they're actually encompassed by Lisp itself. Mm-hmm. So one of my favorite books is Peter Norvig's Paradigms of AI Programming: Case Studies in Common Lisp. And in one of the chapters of it, he implements Prolog in several different ways. And the final Prolog implementation is a macro. And that macro is that macro. The macro character is the dash and then greater than sign, just like you would use in a Prolog implementation. And what that macro is, it actually expands into a compiler that takes the input and then compiles the input. Whoa. And then expands the compilation result into the actual the actual way of computing the result in Lisp. So this is actually a compiler that transforms Prolog code into Lisp code to do the same thing.
Okay, no, that's really powerful, yeah. And I think the problem is that most the average programmer doesn't really care of the power. They care more of that. I call them form builders more than programmers because that's the only thing that they do. So do you think Aoki being used on application development or more sophisticated AI or system things?
Well, I think that it can be used for both, but because when you have those kind of expression capabilities, you can also have, I mean, say form builders, that's a good name for it. But I mean, what you can do in that kind of circumstances is that you can have one guy that is not a form builder but an advanced programmer, and he can define a little language in Aoki that is really good for building forms. And then the form builders can use that subset of the language to build their forms.
Mm. So do you think that's the goal of the of Martin Fowler's and Neil's talk about DSLs and actually solving problems by defining the domain in a DSL first and then solving the problems?
Yeah, it's definitely a part of it. Although, I mean, there are always limitations on what you can do inside of a language, and sometimes it's not a good thing to do an internal DSL. In some cases, you get very real benefits from defining a small language outside of it. So yes, I think that this is part of it, but it's not all of it. But just to reiterate, Aoki is a language that I'm creating for myself. I fully expect to use it for more and more stuff because I really like programming in it so far. But it's a programming language designed specifically for myself, and there is no guarantee that anyone else in the world will ever like it or look at it at all. I mean, that's what happens with most custom design languages, and I'm fine with that. Because I'm designing it for my own sake.
Yeah, it would be like maybe what Haskell is doing, and a more research-toward language that you can try stuff that the mainstream is not ready for it yet. Maybe it's too early for them to understand what the concept is.
Yeah, maybe. Or maybe it just gets totally ignored. That's fine. The one thing that I find interesting about the process is that I'm trying to document my thinking and my decisions in it, because that's also something that I haven't seen done before. Okay, I started out from scratch with the implementation, and I've been thinking about how to implement this language and what decisions to make. And I've been writing about how I go about it. I've been asking my blog readers for questions about, well, what should I name this? How should I handle this? And so on. Because designing a language is obviously hard. So I try to give some insight into the process of how I go about it. And also, I've been, since day one, I've been implementing everything and pushing it out to GitHub. So it's been a total open source project. And you can follow every commit and see all these stupid things I make if you want. It's totally open, and everyone can see everything from step one.
And in its current state, I can just git clone the repository, and it's already in a running state that I don't have to tweak too much to make it running, or it's still missing parts?
It runs, it compiles, but it doesn't have any directory prompt. But yes, you can run it immediately after you compile it.
Awesome.
Although, I mean, the standard library, I wouldn't call the standard library as having holes in it. I would rather say that the standard library is... They are small spots of implemented stuff and lots of stuff that needs to be implemented.
Okay. And I was thinking that maybe because you like AI so much, maybe Aoki has something related to AI programming.
Well, not really. I mean, it's got the same benefits of being able to modify itself on structure, but I haven't had an explicit goal of AI programming with Aoki. It's rather been that Aoki is just something that I want to do to see where the limits of expressing things with a language can be. And of course, those limits right now, I'm working under some constraints. So Aoki is defined by how expressive you can make a dynamic language. Another example would be to try to make something similar to Aoki, but try to make it really, really strongly typed, really statically strongly typed. I think that would be possible too, and that language would be very different from Aoki. And that's something I might try in a few years. But
something like Charles is doing with Ruby and in the Dubi thing.
Yeah, that's true, except that Dubi, and that's a very cool project, by the way. What he's trying to do is something that is typed the same way as Java without actually having to write those types.
Mm-hmm. So, and well, I think Aoki is a cool language, and I think it's I hope you have a good gift present, Christmas present for us. And all this language discussion is interesting because people don't realize that you have these other kinds of branches. So for a beginner programmer, now that listen to all of this blabbing about geeky language stuff, what do you recommend would be the first steps to go away from the traditional mainstream programming and learn new concepts? You mentioned Lisp, but is it the definitive way of starting? Because most people think it's a little bit hard, the parentheses and stuff.
Yeah, I know, and that's a problem. I mean, the problem with Lisp is that it's true. It's got a reputation for being hard to start out with. And to a degree, that reputation is true. It's got a steeper learning curve than most languages at the beginning. But I mean, so I would say if you're a Java or C++ if you're a Java or C# developer and haven't tried any other language, you might dip your toes in by first going to a language like Ruby or Python, because those languages are actually quite far away from the mainstream. They are very powerful in many degrees and have lots of stuff that Java misses, for example. Now, if you are a Ruby or Python developer, I think that the thinking behind a language like Smalltalk or Lisp would make sense to you once you get past the initial hurdle. So I would say just stick in and do it, because it's kind of like taking medicine or whatever. It hurts a little bit, but it's going to be worth it.
Yeah, and another technical question that I forgot. Smalltalk has this cool, I don't know if it's only Smalltalk, this cool concept of runtime only. It's not development time and then runtime, so having source code separated and an image. Do you think it's a concept that could be improved more to other languages like Aoki?
Well, so the image concept of always running inside of an image have some really good advantages. One of them is that you can do things like the way we do refactorings right now is kind of primitive, actually. I mean, refactorings in the current existing IDEs are based on trying to figure out what the code does based on the AST, but not by running the code. That means that there is a small class of things that you can do that will actually defeat the refactoring capabilities. While in a language like Smalltalk, where everything is running at all the time, the implementation doesn't have to guess because it knows what it's doing because the stuff is already running. So refactoring can be totally safe and do some quite powerful stuff. And actually, I mean, refactoring in Smalltalk actually looks more like I would almost call it monkey patching, or the way we in the Ruby community do monkey patching and runtime patching of existing running systems or libraries, because that's the way you do things. You define a way of transforming something. Mm. The difference is that in Ruby, monkey patching needs to be defined in text and it has to be run every time it starts up because it can't change the text. But since the actual code, that is the canonical code, it's the running code in Smalltalk. When you change it once, it's changed, mm-hmm. and that's it. Now, me personally, there are many good things about the Smalltalk model. I think it makes sense for many cases, and it's really cool. And for a language like for a runtime like Emacs, it's totally unbelievably useful. That said, I think there is also large benefit in keeping the representation of the code separate from the running version of it. I mean, those are just two different cases, and I think that it would be really good to have a language that could encompass both of them, because they make sense in different circumstances.
But you don't think of having this kind of functionality?
I briefly entertained the thought, and I decided right now, no, I'm not going to do it. It would be quite easy to add something like that to Aoki, because Aoki has all the runtime introspection features that you would expect from such a system. So, I mean, if someone want to build a swing image system, that would be totally possible.
And which brings me to another discussion that I would like to hear your opinion. I know this conversation goes on and on. And it is the concept of some weird discussion, some comes from time to time, about pure object-oriented programming, that Smalltalk is more pure than any other object-oriented language, like Java, for instance. Do you think is there any, benefit on being a pure OOP language, or does it make sense?
So, discussing purity and comparing Java and Smalltalk is an interesting thing. I mean, from this perspective, yes, Smalltalk is a pure object-oriented language, mm-hmm. and Java is definitely not. The problem with Java is that Java is not a pure object-oriented language because it's got all these primitive things and so on. The problem with Java is that the reason that Java is not pure is because of performance concerns.
Yeah.
And that means those are trade-offs, and those are kind of annoying in Java. But in a language like Common Lisp, which got a really cool object-oriented system called CLOS, the object orientation is actually not in the full language, in the whole language. And in fact, CLOS could actually be implemented totally using Lisp macros. So that means that Lisp is not a pure OO language, because OO is something you can implement in the language and use in it, but it's not the whole language. That's why Common Lisp is generally called a multi-paradigm language, because and Lisp is more multi-paradigm than most other languages, because you can implement any kind of paradigm. I mean, if you want AOP, you can implement that in Lisp, but you don't have to go and wait for Sun for 10 years to implement it, or 4 years, or something like that. So the distinction in purity is interesting, but only when that distinction actually makes sense of checking for a purity model that is compromised because of performance concerns or other concerns. If a language is not pure because it explicitly embraces different paradigms, in that case, I would say there is nothing that says that a pure OO language is better than a non-pure one.
Okay. And I think finally, the last discussion that's going on is everybody agrees that the JVM is one of the best VMs around. But since Gemstone appeared in the scene, they brought this Gemstone stuff, and then they say, oh, no, it's not that good. Working in two languages now in the JVM, JRuby and Aoki, what do you think of the internals of the JVM? Are they satisfactory for you? Do you think it still needs too much to improve, and or the Gemstone VM has a point on that regard?
So Gemstone is right to a degree. The Gemstone Smalltalk virtual machine is really cool, really great, and they've got some fantastic technology. That's true. But the assumption that you can, it's really comparing apples and oranges.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the JVM is really good. There are some things that could be better, but it's definitely good enough. And the JVM also has got some benefits that you can't really compare. So, for example, I would not hesitate to say that the garbage collectors in the JVM is much better than Gemstones. And there are other things that, it's not really fair to compare them, because they do different things. I think it's also, it feels a little bit strange that Gemstones says stuff like that. I mean, they are obviously a company that want to sell their product, but it feels a little bit, it doesn't feel good that they're bad-mouthing like that. I mean, it feels like bad-mouthing, and it doesn't really have technical merit, because it's, as I said, it's not really fair to compare the two things, because they do different things. And the one thing you can say for the JVM is that it's running over 200 different languages. That's not true for Gemstone. And I'll also have to add that the whole Gemstone thing about announcing maglev and showing that, that was really cool. Well, have you seen anything more since then?
Exactly.
I mean, what's happening there? It's really cool to go out and announce that you have the best, most scalable Ruby interpreter, Ruby system of all, and then not saying anything for 8 months.
Exactly. Well, I think it's a good time for us. I feel like we are in a transition because it's the first time that we have that many different paradigms and languages coming up to the scene. Maybe the whole surge of internet and tweeting and blogging is helping. And we have, I think, more language discussion now than we had like 10 years ago. Do you see any trend coming up?
I think, as I said yesterday, I think that the general trend I'm seeing is that the hegemony of the Java and C++ and C# style languages are disappearing. I think the world is going back to a state where we are going to use more languages. We're going to use the right languages for the right task. Because a language is really, and this is also something that I've been saying for a long time, Java developers talk about tools all the time. They always talk about tools. You will see, I saw a Java user groups panel yesterday with Bob Lee and Rod Johnson and a few other of the more well-known Java people. And you know, they said tools once in a minute, at least. I heard the word tool and tools all the time at that panel. Java developers are obsessed by tools. And that's cool. But it feels a little bit like this obsession with tools is because the Java language needs so many tools to actually be really useful. So what I think about, the way I see this is that, and what it feels like the Java developers have a tendency to forget, is that the language they're using is the most important tool. At least that's how I believe it is. For me, the language I'm using is the most important tool, and that's what shapes all the other stuff.
Yeah, I think maybe Paul Graham was right.
Yeah, I mean, he was right about many things. I totally agree with him about many of the things he said.
Okay, I think this was the biggest interview I've ever done. And I could go on and on, I think, for hours or days. But I think that's enough for our listeners. Thank you very much for joining.
Thank you.